Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Chof Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. In our previous shiur at the end of Daf Chof Dalet Amud Beis, we had learned a Mishnah that pointed out a distinction, or the distinctions between earthenware vessels, kli cheres, and other kelim. The major difference that was featured in the Brisa on the lower part of Chof Dalet Amud Beis was that earthenware vessels, kli cheres, pottery, they absorb tuma through their airspace, through their interior. They do not absorb tumah, ritual impurity, through contact with the outside of the vessel. For example, if a dead sheretz is found dangling in the airspace, even without contact, but is in the interior of the kli cheres will become tumah. It is certainly the case if the sheretz touches the interior of the kli cheres. But this is the big chiddush. The special feature of the kli cheres is that even in its airspace, the sheretz, which is known as an av hatuma, a primary level of tuma, will radiate its tuma and affect the kli cheres, making the kli cheres a rishon tuma, that's one stage lower. And this is done even without any physical contact between the sheretz and the kli cheres. With regard to other vessels, if a sheretz is found dangling in their airspace, they are not affected. Other vessels are affected only through actual contact. Contact with other kinds of vessels, vessels made of other materials, they will become tamei if contact is made with their outside surface as well as the inside surface. With regard to the kli cheres, as we said, their outside surface will in effect repel the tuma, won't the vessel will not be affected. When we turn now to our daf chof hei, we notice the second line from the top, a diamond. In fact, along this omid we see several diamonds. We've introduced their role under our topic heading, structural note, in the outside margin. Nosei is the topic heading, and nivne, the structural note. We feature a diamond, and we've written hatsaot, suggestions, shehein neged din hamishna, suggestions that are deliberately stated, as we'll say, to challenge the Mishnah, but as we continue in our note, muva'ois, these are presented, are brought here, kidei lehochiach nipsukim as dinei ha-Mishnah. It's really an attempt to force the Gemara to present the psukim that validate or serve as a basis and establish that which was taught in the Mishnah. We might add Mishnah and Brisa. So, as we look at Daf Chof Hei, let us just skim down the suggestions first of all, being that we just introduced the rules taught on Chof Dalet Amud Beis, you'll see immediately how these diamonds represent challenges to those rules. So the first diamond says, V'yei kli cheres mitame migabo, mikal v'chomer. A suggestion that the pottery should absorb tuma from its outside, from through contact with its outside surface, contact between the source of tuma, let us say the dead sherets, the dead creature that in its death radiates tuma. So the suggestion here is, let us say that the pottery would absorb tuma through the sherets touching or sherets contact with the outside surface. The next diamond says, "View kol hakelim mitamin me'aviron." We want to suggest in the second diamond that other kinds of vessels, other than pottery, will absorb tuma through their airspace, which we said, of course, is not the case. And the third diamond says, "V'lo yu kol hakelim mitamin migabon, elo mitochon ubenegia." The third suggestion states that let it be that all other, non-pottery vessels, which is the we call the all the other material vessels, should not absorb tuma through contact with their outside surface, but rather only through contact with the interior surface, the interior lining of the vessel. Which, of course, that also is not the case, because other vessels do absorb tuma through contact with their outside surface. So as we turn back to the top line of the Gemara and start the reading, Omale Rav Ado Bar Avo L'Rovo, V'yehei Klei Cheres Mitame Migabo Mikal V'Chomer. Let us suggest that pottery would absorb tuma through contact between the source of tuma, the sherets, and we'll continue to use sherets as an example, even though there are many other examples of sources of tuma, but for the sake of simplicity, we'll refer to the sherets. So let it be that a kli cheres, upon contact with between its outside surface and a dead sherets, the pottery would become tame. Uma kola kelim she'ein mitamin me'aviron mitamin migabon, other vessels that repel tuma or do not absorb through their airspace. In other words, they're not so sensitive to tuma absorption, but when it comes to their outside surface, they do absorb tuma. Klicheres shemetame me'aviro, the klicheres which we can describe as being more sensitive to tuma when looking at the avir aspect, the airspace aspect, eno din sheyetame megabo, then certainly it should absorb tuma through contact between the sherets and outside surface of the pottery. Omar Kro, so to this, the Pasuk has an answer. The Pasuk says, V'chol kli posuach asher ein tzomi posil olov. That's the Pasuk. The Rashi says, kli posuach midekopid apsicho, from the fact that the Torah is emphasizing openness, the openness of the opening of the vessel, Shma Mino, Bekli Cheres Koi. It must be that we are talking about earthenware vessels. De Ezehu Kli Shetumaso Kodemes Lepischo, Be Eze Kelim Hirgila Turas Atuma Lahashkim Lahar Levod Derech Pischo. Which kind of vessel does the Torah mention as entering through the opening of the vessel? The Pasuk refers to El Tocho in other contexts. When talking about the Kli Cheres, it mentions El Tocho, into it, into its entrance. So when this Pasuk says, V'chol Kli Posuach, Posuach is a reference to an open vessel, and the open means it then enters the interior. So the Gemara goes on to say, Ezu kli shetumaso kodemes lepischo, heve omer ze kli cheres. This is a reference to the pottery. V'chi ein tzomid posil olov, hu detome. When tzomid posil is the covering, the seal of the vessel, the covering which seals the vessel. So the pasuk is telling us that when the seal is not on it, then it becomes tamei. Ha yesh tzamid pasil olav tahor. However, if it is sealed, it's covered and closed, it is tahor, meaning that there is no tumah that can affect a closed vessel made of pottery, which from this we see counter to the suggestion that the pottery should absorb tumah from its outside. The pasuk is telling us that the only time the pottery is subject to tumah absorption is when it is open, but when it is closed, it is not subject to tumah absorption, thereby precluding the possibility of the pottery becoming tumah through contact with its outside surface. The next suggestion, Yu kol hakelim mitamin me'aviron mikavachomer. Let us say that other kinds of vessels would absorb tumah through their airspace, through kalvachomer logic, as follows. Uma kli cheres she'en metame megabo metame me'aviro. The pottery, which we saw, does not absorb tumah through contact with outside surface, yet does absorb tumah through the airspace. Kol hakelim, all other vessels, shemitamin migabon, which are sensitive or subject to tumah through contact with outside surface, eino din shemitamin me'aviron. They certainly should be subject to tumah absorption through their airspace. So how do we know that that's not the case? Omar kro toichoi. The pasuk says tocho in the context of the kli cheres. Tocho meaning interior. Toichoi shel ze, veloi toichoi shel acher. When it comes to airspace, its tocho is a limitation expression. Only its airspace, the kli cheres, the pottery, and not tocho of other vessels. The Gemara asks, "Vahani tocho ho darshinu?" The word tocho we've already darshined. We've already used that for drushes, and you can notice that by looking back at Daf Chof Dalet Amid Beis, we saw the word tocho already used up, so to speak. So how can you say that it's used for this new point of law? The Gemara answers that there is an abundance of tocho word possibilities to darshan. Arbo tocho ksivi. In fact, the word tocho appears twice. However, the Torah feels that we can darshan, the Gemara feels we can darshan, the basic word is toch, and the vav at the end of it is a suffix. So that the word tocho represents, even though it's two words, but each one of them has the word toch in it, plus each one's vav, giving you a total of four drosha possibilities. So that's what it means, arba tocho ksivi, tocho, toch, tocho, toch. And what the Gemara just did is shows that the word tocho contains within it the word toch, and we are mentioning that the vav represents an additional drosha possibility. So what do the four words represent? Chad legufe. One is to tell me the basic halacha that Rashi points out. Chad legufe toch ha'amur letame legufe osa shiyatame hakli kol oichu nemashkin shebaviro afopi shelo noga. It tells me that everything, all food that's in the vessel, once food is in a pottery vessel that has become tameh, all the food content will also become tameh, even if the food is not touching the walls of the vessel itself. By the mere fact it's contained within the airspace of the vessel, that is enough to metame the food. This was, in fact, the very last point in our previous shiur. It was featured at the very top line of this Gemara, where it said, "Vafilu mole chardol," that all food, even if it's numerous and small in size, everything within the vessel becomes tamei, indicating that it's the airspace that's responsible for the tumah and not tumas mago. The next tocho or drosha was the chad legzero shava. The Rashi points out the chad legzero shava lumoid al hakli shiakabel tumah mino avir. This tells me that the vessel itself is mekabel tumah through the airspace. Afal pi shelo noga bo hasheretz, even though the sheretz didn't touch the vessel itself. Kedamrin li'el nemar tocho letamei. This was a subject of our Gemara on Chof Dalid Omid Beis. That's at that point we established that just like the interior, the airspace of the pottery is capable of projecting tuma to things within it, the airspace is also a means or a medium through which the vessel itself can absorb the initial tuma. That's learned through the Gezeira Shava, the word comparison. Now, the third tocho, the chad tocho shel ze velo tocho shel achir. This is the point that we had just a few lines above, and you can see this by just glancing at the little star that you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara and paralleling it with the star just above. The chad and the fourth drosha is toichoi velo toich toichoi. The pasuk speaks about that which in the airspace of the pottery itself, but not that which is in the airspace of a vessel that's in the airspace of the pottery. That's, we'll call it a double inside. Once again, let's read that again. V'chad tocho, the posuk emphasizes the interior of the pottery vessel itself, v'lo toch tocho, and not the interior of something else, of a vessel that's within the pottery. V'afilu kli shetef matzil. Even kli shetef is a reference to all the other kinds of vessels. Shetef literally means washing or rinsing, but it's a reference to vessels that have tahara in a mikveh. As opposed to pottery, when it becomes tameh, it has no tahara, it cannot be purified through immersion in a mikveh. The other kinds of vessels can. Those other kinds of vessels, by the way, do absorb tumah from their outside. However, the idea of vessels absorbing tumah from their outside, that's only through tumas mago, that's through contact, not by virtue of the fact that they are in the airspace of a tome pottery vessel. It's true that the kli shetef, these other material vessels, are sitting within the interior of the pottery, but the contact point would not communicate tumah in the first place, because the pottery vessel is a rishon l'tumah, and a rishon l'tumah doesn't communicate tumah to vessels. So from that standpoint, the vessel itself would not become tumah. Furthermore, what this halacha of lo toch tocho is communicating, we attempted through a little illustration on the inside margin to demonstrate, where you see, we'll call this a side view of a kli cheres, the lower rimmed outer vessel, and the high rimmed inner vessel is labeled kli shetef. You can see that we have within the inner vessel, we have something labeled as ochlin, food, and we have a sheretz that's dangling in the airspace of the kli cheres. The halacha here is that the food within the kli shetef will not become tomei, and that's by virtue of the gzeres hakosuv of tocho velo toch tocho. Of course, if the rim of the kli shetef were lower than the rim of the kli cheres, that would be a different story. But it's in this case specifically, where the rim of the kli shetef is higher than the rim of the kli cheres, the food within the kli shetef is protected from the effects of the sheretz that's in the airspace of the outer kli cheres. And once again, that's derived from the drosha of tocho velo toch tocho. Now, our third suggestion, which is counter to the halacha, velo yu kol hakelim mitamin migabon elo mitoichanu benigia. Let it be suggested that all other kinds of vessels would not absorb tuma through contact with their outside surface, but only with contact at their inside surface. Mikal v'chomer, using the following logic. Uma kli cheres shemitame me'aviro eino mitame megabo. The pottery which absorbs tuma through airspace, but not through contact with outside surface. Kol hakelim she'ein mitamin me'aviron, all other kinds of vessels which don't absorb tuma through their airspace, eno din she'ein mitamin migabon, then certainly they should not absorb tuma through contact with their outside surface. How is it then that we know that other kelim do absorb tuma through contact with their outside surface? Omar Kro, the pasuk says, the chol kli posuach asher ein somid posil olav tomei hu. Hai hu dechi ein somid posil olav tomei ha yesh somid posil olav tohor. It's the earthenware vessel, the pottery, that we say if it's open, it would absorb tuma. If it's sealed closed, it won't absorb tuma, indicating that the outside surface of the pottery repels the tuma. Ha kola kelim, but with regard to other kinds of vessels, we say bein sheyesh somit posaleim, whether they are sealed, bein sheein somit posaleim, or whether they are open, mitamin, they will absorb tuma. So that we have in this last suggestion, we see in the pasuk a word of limitation where it said tome hu, and hu meaning only it, only the pottery vessel will repel tuma when it is sealed. Namely, tuma will not affect it from the outside, but that's only pottery. Other kinds of vessels will become tome even if they happen to be sealed, and that is through contact with their outside surface. As we go on, we encounter a new Mishnah, and the topic heading that we've assigned to this section in the outside margin, Hevdelim, differences between clay eitz and clay mateches, between wooden vessels as opposed to metal vessels. Tohor b'kli eitz, tomei b'kli matchos, that which is tohor, pure, in the context of wooden vessels, will be subject to tuma by metal vessels. Tohor b'kli matchos, tomei b'kli eitz. As to what the Mishnah is referring to, we will wait till the Braisa which follows, which offers clarification. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a Tanaic source. You can see a number of lines that appear in a frame. It's open on the bottom. The frame is not closed because the framed section continues to Amud Beis at the top, where we have enclosed a Tanaic source. The framing in our marking system represents highlighting Tanaic sources so as to set them apart from the rest of the Gemara literature. Tanu Rabbanan, Golmei Kli Eitz Tamein, Pshutehen Tahorin. Golmei Kli Matchos Tahorin, Pshutehen Tamein. We will, of course, go over this opening expression, but we must define the term golmei before going on. So we glance at the Rashi. You'll notice the third of the widest lines. Golmei shaloi nigmaro kol melachton. We're talking about vessels that are in advanced stages of manufacture. However, the final stages have not been reached. As will be explained, avol nigmaro chakikoson, they have been carved out. In other words, we're talking about vessels that have an interior to them. Urien hein l'tashmishan. They are already fit to perform their basic role. However, as we said, the final touches have not been applied yet. That's the term gomei. So, turning back to the brisa, we've divided the brisa, the opening lines of the brisa, into two sections using Roman numerals, and under each Roman numeral, we've divided it into aleph and beis, so that the opening is gomei kli eitz tamein. These are wooden vessels that are, they have an interior, they've been carved out. However, the final touches have not been applied. Nevertheless, they are subject to absorbing tuma. Pshutayin is flat wooden vessels, something like a breadboard. It's a flat piece of wood. Flat pieces of wood are not mekabel tuma. And that's based on a posuk in which the wooden vessel is compared to the sak. The posuk is found in the Rashi on the fourth wide line. Rashi quotes it and says, Mikol kli eitz, o beged, o or, o sak. So that just like sak, as is in the English, sack is something that is designed to contain things. It's something that you move around with, whether it's empty or full of content. You'll move it around easily, and because it's a sack, it contains that which is in it. And while moving it, nothing will fall out. So to the eight, the wood that's featured in the same pasuk, in order to be subject to tuma, must have the same characteristics, something that you would move around freely, whether it's empty or full. But if you have a flat piece of wood, you're not going to move it around freely when something is on it, because it'll just fall right off. It doesn't have a rim to keep it in, to keep it on the wood. Hence, pshutei and pshutei kli eitz are tohor. Now, in contrast with that, gomei kli matchos, metal vessels that are lacking their final touches, tohoirin, don't absorb tuma. Pshutei and tamein, but flat metal vessels will absorb tuma. For example, a standard cutting knife made of, let us say, one piece of metal, as many knives are, they will be a mekabel tuma. And the reason for that is that the metal is not featured in the pasuk that we just read, hence there is no restriction of comparing it to the sack. So as long as it's a complete functioning metal vessel, even if it happens to be flat, it will absorb tuma. Nimtza, now the brisa goes on and says, summarizes, it says, tohor b'kli cheres. The result that we see from this is that which is tohor, in the case of kli eitz, wooden vessels, tome b'kli matchis. Citing an example, that would be the pshute kli matchis. The pshute kli eitz are tohor, pshute kli matchis are tome, are mekabel tuma. Tohor b'kli matchos, that which is not subject to tuma when it comes to metal vessels, for example, the gomei kli matris, tomei bli kli eitz. The gomei kli eitz are mekabel tuma. As we go on in the source, we have a double underlining marking. This is designed to highlight the points at which in the brisa we explain or give examples of the gomei kli eitz and gomei kli matachos. That we'll see later. The brisa will give us numerous examples of final touches, we'll call them, that one does to vessels in their manufacture. The Eluhain Gomei Kli Eitz. And the following are examples of Gomei Kli Eitz, meaning vessels that are lacking their final touches. So it says here in the brisa, Kol She'osid Lashuf, Lashabetz, Lagarer, Lakarkev, Latiach Betunus, Lachusir Kain, O Ogen, O Ozen, Tomei. We read that quickly. Each term is worthy of a translation. However, we read it to give you a feeling of that that this is a list of different stages or touches that one may apply to a vessel. And it says at the beginning of this list, kol she'osid loshuv, that which you will in the future do. In other words, right now it's lacking these touches. Now, what are they? So the first one, we said kol she'osid loshuv. Rashi addresses this. Loshuv, he says, Rashi says, l'shafshef, to rub it, rub the wooden vessel, the dover hamachlikon umetzachzachon, something that smooths it out and shines it. Kamo shosin be'esiv shekorin, and he uses a French word. There was some type of procedure using a type of esiv, a type of grass. Maybe it was a coarse type of grass that you would rub on the vessel, and it would rub on the wood, and it would end up smoothing it and shining it, giving a shiny finish. The next expression, l'shabetz. L'shabetz, Rashi points out in his commentary, he says, shemechusaren, we've dashed underlined this phrase, shemechusaren litkobehen masmeros umishbetzotz lenoi. These are different adornments, different decorative touches. Rashi's description is hammering in little decorative nails that beautify things, like people do with argos hanoshim. Maybe Rashi's referring to something like a jewelry box. It has little designs or appurtenances that are hammered in to its surface. The next is legarer. Legarer is using a file or a plane to smooth down the vessel. So we're talking about a kli eitz, a wooden vessel that has not had this sanding down stage done to it. Likarkev is the next expression. This has to do with little etchings that are etched into the vessel. Lahatiach betunis. Tunis happens to be a type of fish. I don't know if it has any relationship to the tuna fish, but whatever the case is, Rashi describes, based on a Gemara in Chulin, that the skin of this fish was used to rub on vessels, and it would give it some type of finish. Mechusar kain, o ogen o oizen. It's the vessel that we're talking about, the gomi kliates, are lacking a kain, a base, an ogen, a rim, or an ozen, a handle. Well, if any of these things are lacking, or the above mentioned stages have not been performed, nevertheless, tomei, the wooden vessel at this pre-finished stage will already be subject to kabbalas tuma. However, mechusar chatita tohor, if it's lacking the carving out of its interior, then it won't be mekabel tuma. The Gemara has an interruption here for the sake of clarification. Mechusar, and that's why we have this, by the way, in the brackets, just to indicate that this is a Gemara interruption. The Brisa continues right afterwards. The bracketed section reads, Mechusar chatita pshita. If you have a wooden vessel that's lacking being carved out, it's obvious that it's not mekabel tuma. It's not a vessel. It's just a block of wood. Loi tzricha. The brisa was necessary in teaching mechusar chatita under the following circumstances: the chok kapiza bekava. He had, let us say, for illustration purposes, a block of wood. His intention was to carve out from this block of wood a measuring vessel called a kav. A kav is made or contains six lug, lug being the name of a measure. What the Bryce is describing is someone who started carving it out, but he carved out a kapiza. Kapiza is a measure equaling three lug. So he's carved out from this block of wood an amount that really is half of what he intends to make from this vessel, or to carve out of this vessel. So even though it has an interior to it already, nevertheless, since his kavona, since his intention is to complete it to a six lug measure, a kav measure, the fact that he's carved out only a kapiza amount makes it such that it's not going to Mekabel Tuma at this stage. As we go on in the source, we're going to find a description of Gome Kli Matas. We will see a number of words repeated, the final touches that we described above with the case in the context of the Kli Eitz. So if you are, we won't re-translate the expressions. You can refer back to what we mentioned with regard to the Kli Eitz. Likewise, make reference to Rashi if there is any need for clarification. So the Brisa goes on to say that the Elohein Kli Golme Kli Matros, these are the Golme, the unfinished metal vessels, Kol She'osid, all those that you will need to Loshuf, Leshabetz, Legarer, Lekarker, Lahakish Bekurnis, this is a new expression, that's to bang out with a hammer. If you have, in the making of a metal vessel, sometimes there are little dents that you smooth out by hammering them out with a hammer. So if it needs that, it's considered Golme Kli Eitz because you haven't hammered it out yet. Likewise, Mechuser Keno Ogin Oizen, it's missing the base, rim, or handle. Tahar. All of these are examples of Golme Kli Matas, and in accordance with the rule, Golme Kli Matas are not Mekabel Tuma. Mechuser Kisui Tome. If you have a vessel that you intend to make a lid for it, and you haven't made its lid yet, that is not considered Golme Kli Matas, and therefore it will be Mekabel Tuma, it will absorb Tuma, even though the lid has not been made for it yet. Now, the Gemara wants to know, what's the difference between, in terms of why is there this difference between Kli, Golme Kli Eitz and Golme Kli Matris? Why is it by Golme Kli Eitz are you willing to say that it's Mekabel Tuma, whereas by Golme Kli Matris it's Tohar, not Mekabel Tuma? To answer this question, we see two approaches. We've underlined the names, Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Nachman. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Hoyul Lechavoid Asuyin. Since metal vessels are made in order to, they're made for honorable purposes. Lechavoid, they have importance to them, and as such, a person is very concerned with every final touch, so to speak, because they're made for honor. They will not Mekabel Tuma if they're lacking those final touches. Rav Nachman Omar, Hoyul Udmeyam Yikorim, since they are expensive. So since you're spending money, a lot of money, for the acquisition of clay matris, you want to have every final touch. You're makbid on it. And as a rule, when you're dealing with the realm of Tumas and Taras, one's kpeda meaning one's one's concern over things plays a major role. So since one is concerned with these final touches, whether it be because the vessel itself is used for purposes of honor, or because of how much you're going to pay for it, there is concern for these final touches. And if they're lacking, so it hasn't met your expectations, and therefore it's not considered a final vessel, and as a result of that, only vessels are Mekabel Tuma, non-vessels are not Mekabel Tuma. My Binayu, what is the difference between the approach of Rabbi Yochanan versus that of Rav Nachman? What could be an illustration of a point of difference? I think more answers. Iko Binayu, Klei Etzem. Bone vessels. Vessels fashioned from animal bones. They happen to be expensive, but they are not used for purposes of honor. The Ozda Rav Nachman Litame. Rav Nachman, that we just saw, described the Kli Matris, and there the attribute he emphazizes was expense. You see that Rav Nachman is consistent with what he has said elsewhere. The Omer Rav Nachman, Kli Etzem Ke Kli Matris Domu. That bone vessels are like metal vessels, and what happens to be in common between the two of them? They are both expensive. If Rav Nachman held, for example, kli matris were designed for honoring, let's say, important guests or what have you, he wouldn't have said that the kli etzem, the bone vessels, are like the metal, because people don't use bone vessels when wanting to honor important individuals. So the fact that he compares one to the other must be on the basis of that common denominator, namely that they're both expensive. The fact that we're paralleling the bone vessels to metal vessels implies that that bone vessels absorb tuma. And the Gemara asks, Michlal the Kli Etzem Mekabli Tuma? Are we then to assume from this, to conclude from this, that bone vessels absorb tuma? It may be noted that in the pasuk we read on Omid Aleph, in which we saw the eitz and the sak, other materials were mentioned. Beged would be a material, and or being leather, those were mentioned, but bone was not mentioned in that pasuk. Therefore, it's of interest to the Gemara, from where do you know that bone vessels would absorb tuma? So the Gemara answers, after having been asked, is it so that vessels made of bone material absorb tuma? The Gemara answers, yes, they do, desanyo, and it's taught in the following Tanaic source. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan Broika Oimer, Ma Talmud Loimar v'chol maisa izin tischato. This is a posuk indicating the need for purification of items made from goats. What items do you make from goats? And it says, v'chol maisa izin, everything that is made from goats. It seems to be of an inclusive nature. So the Gemara answers, explains, lahavi davar haba min ha'izim, to include items made from goats, min ha'karnayim, from their horns, min ha'tlafayim, from their hooves, shar behem v'chayim minayin, other animals other than goats, other animals, whether domesticated or chaya undomesticated, from where do I know that materials made from those animals also would mekabel tuma? Talmud lomar, v'chol maisa. That's a very broad expression. Anything that's made. In kein ma talmud lomar izin. So then, if we're willing to include all animals, then why focus in the pasuk on goats? So the Gemara answers, the Brice answers, prat la'oifois. We are excluding vessels made from bird byproducts. Rashi cites as an example, if someone fashioned something from the nails of birds, those would not be vessels that would makabel tuma. But as far as vessels made from the bone material of other animals, we see from this pasuk, b'chol ma'aseh izin tischato, they would be included. Technically speaking, the brisa itself featured horns and hooves. I think it's reasonable to assume that horns and hooves are of very similar material, we'll call it, to bones, and hence bones are included in this. If you're going to focus on a literal translation of etzem being bone, then we ought to suggest such an explanation. Rashi also points out that as far as referring to leather, when this pasuk says anything made from goats, and of course goats have skin which is made into leather, that I don't need this pasuk for leather. Leather ore is included in the other phrase that we made reference to before. In fact, here Rashi says that in the resha of this pasuk in Bamidbar, Lamed Aleph, you have a reference to or, and that's of great significance. The reason being that we quoted the pasuk from Vayikra Yud Aleph, which also mentioned or, but here Rashi feels that the resha of this pasuk itself contains a reference to or. Continuing, in the Gemara, we encounter now a new Mishnah. Hachayov b'shkedim hamorim poter b'mesukim. Hachayov b'mesukim poter b'morim. Under our nosei heading in the outside margin, we've featured these items. Shkedim hamorim, shkedim mesukim osai, chayovim b'hafroshes. We're talking about some type of agricultural product. In modern Hebrew, the term shkedim is translated into English as almonds. Personally, I can't guarantee that that is the accurate translation as far as that's the intent of the Mishnah, but if it is, so be it. There are two types of shkedim. There are those that are known as bitter ones. In fact, in English, there is a product known as bitter almond, a bitter almond. And there are the shkedim mesukim, literally the sweet shkedim. They are two different varieties of shkedim, though. As far as the Mishnah, as we've seen till now in the last series of Mishnayos, which all have these different types of contrasts in them, this Mishnah too will be explained by the upcoming Brisa. So let's continue for further clarification by learning the Brisa. Tanu Rabbanan, Shkedim Hamorim, this variety of Shkedim known as the bitter Shkedim, Ktanim Chayovim, when they are young in their development, as they grow, when they're still small, they are not yet bitter. And it's common to eat them in their small state. Hence, since it's considered oichlin, is considered something someone would eat, you're obligated to tithe the necessary tithes that are characteristic of products of that grow in Eretz Yisrael, the trumas and maisras. Gedolim p'turim, however, when they are mature, when they're large, they are exempt from tithing. They're bitter. People will not eat them. Mesukim, however, shkedim that are classified as shkedim mesukim, gedolim chayavim, when they're large, when they're fully developed, that's when people eat them, and hence that's when they're obligated to be tithed. Ktanim p'turim, however, when they're small, it's not common to eat them when they're small. Hence, they're exempt from being tithed. And now, another opinion on this matter, with two girsos, two versions of this second opinion, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Mishum Aviv. Rabbi Shmuel quotes his father, Rabbi Yossi, that says, Zeh v'zeh liftor, both are exempt. The Amri law, Zeh v'zeh lechiyuv. The other version is, both are obligated. Now, Rashi explains under the Dibur Maschil Zeh Vezeh Liftor Ktanim Pturin. The small ones are exempt Bein Morim Ubein Mesukim. That explanation would require, that approach would require some deal of explanation. Why, if they are, we're saying here the ketanim are pturim, according to this, small versions, small or premature versions of these shkedim, whether they be morim or mesukin, is even the morim, the chidush here is, even the morim, even the bitter ones, when they're small, which was pointed out, people may eat them, he's of the opinion that they are nevertheless exempt. The other approach, the other version of Zev Zelechiv, Rashi says, Gdolim, the mature variety, the mature stage of both varieties, Bein Morim, Bein Mesukim, are obligated to be tithed. Now, if you're dealing with something that's mature and it happens to be bitter, and you're telling me it needs to be tithed, what in the world are they fit for? People wouldn't eat them as is. So why would there be a version that says that they're obligated in tithing? That will be explained later. Continuing in the Gemara, Omar Reb Ilo, Hoira Rabbi Chanina b'tzipori, Reb Ilo informs us that Rabbi Chanina ruled in the town of Tzipori, Kedivri ha'oimer zeh v'zeh liftor. He issued a lenient ruling. Zeh v'zeh liftor, according to Rashi's explanation, it means that these shkedim in their premature stage, when before maturity, when they're small, there is no need to tithe. And the chiddush there, as we said before, would even be even the bitter ones, but since they are small, they are exempt from tithing. Now, out of curiosity, the Gemara wants to know, Ulaman diomar zevezeh l'chiyuv, according to the version that said that the large ones, in other words, the mature shkedim, whether they be morim or masukim, there is an obligation to tithe, gedolim l'may chozu. Gedolim, what are they fit for? We might add, gedolim that are morim. What are they fit for? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, hoyo v'yochol amaskon al yedei ha'ur, which means you can sweeten them through the ur, through roasting them over a fire. So since they have a potential of becoming edible, and people will roast them in order to benefit from them, they are obligated to be tithed. As we continue to a new Mishnah, the Mishnah has two sections to it, the first dealing with Temed, and the second section dealing with halachas concerning the Machzitz HaShekel and Meiser Behemah. A word about Temed before learning the Mishnah itself. Temed is a situation where someone had made wine, and after making wine, he drains off the wine, and there remains, we can refer to it as grape debris, but we can be more specific and say there are grape skins, grape seeds that remain. A person may take some water and pour it over the grape remains and anticipate and hope that it ferments and turns into a beverage. We'll refer to it as a second generation wine. Rashi has a very elaborate introduction to this section of the Mishnah, a beautiful layout of the halachas that are relevant to appreciating what the Mishnah is teaching. So to make reference to some of the points that Rashi makes, wine, for example, is something that one can buy with Meiser Sheni money when he arrives in Yerushalayim. Meiser Sheni money is used for buying something classified as Pira. Pira is a very broad expression, not only the simple translation as fruits, but things that grow and develop from a previous generation of whatever. And by that we intend to include even animals, even meat. But we have to be, we can't get too far flung right now, so we want to limit our discussion to wine and the temed. So once the temed, if we can classify the temed as wine, you would be able to buy it with Meiser Sheni money. However, if the temed is not going to be classified as wine, but rather retain its water identity, water is something that you cannot buy with Meiser Sheni funds. Another point that's important to emphasize, and that is the effects that wine and water have, let us say, on a mikveh. Drawn water is unacceptable for a mikveh. So if you have a mikveh that's less than 40 saw, which is the required amount for a mikveh, and you add to the incomplete mikveh 3 lug of drawn water, as opposed to rain water, which is what is necessary for an effective mikveh, if you add 3 lug of drawn water, that will ruin the mikveh. 3 lug of wine, for example, would not ruin a mikveh, without getting into any details which deal with creating discoloration of the mikveh. But on a simple level, wine does not ruin a mikveh, water does. Let us now turn to the Mishnah and deal with the first section, being that we just gave an introduction regarding temed. Hatemed, the temed, as we mentioned before, that's the situation where water was poured over grape remains after the original batch of wine was drawn off. Ad shelo hichmitz, before it ferments, eino nikach bekesef meiser, it's considered mere water, and then hence and therefore you cannot purchase it with meiser sheni funds. Uposel es hamikvah. But for those of you who have not heard any of our previous shiurim, maybe just a word about meiser sheni. Meiser sheni is the expectation that we have of tithing your produce during the 7-year agricultural cycle. The first, second, fourth, and fifth years, one is expected to tithe amongst the different tithes. 10% of the fruits are to be taken by the owner and eaten in Yerushalayim. Either the fruits themselves, or if he can't bring the fruits, he transfers the sanctity of that 10% declared as Meiser Sheni onto money, and uses the money to buy food items in Yerushalayim. So the Mishnah is teaching us that if the temed, let's say you find temed in Yerushalayim, someone is selling temed, but it hasn't fermented, it hasn't become winey yet. So you can't use your meiser sheni money to buy that beverage. And likewise, a second point is uposel es hamikvah, by virtue of the fact that it's classified as water, making it unfit for meiser sheni purchase. It is water and will ruin a mikveh. As we mentioned in our introduction, that 3 lug of drawn water would ruin an incomplete mikveh. Mishehichmitz, on the other hand, once the temet ferments, nikach bekesef meiser, it's then considered wine, and as such, you're allowed to buy it, wine, with kesef meiser. The eino posel es hamikveh. And as we mentioned earlier, without getting into any details, wine basically would not ruin a mikveh. As you can see, we've put a slash mark in the Mishnah, indicating that that which follows is a totally unrelated area of halacha, other than the fact that structurally this is similar to the Reisha and similar to all of the Mishnais that we have learned in recent Dapim, which features contrasts. The Mishnah will talk about brothers having inherited an estate, and it will mention 2 points of halacha, which, by the way, before going any further, as you look ahead in the Gemara onto Daf Chavov, the Gemara itself will not be preoccupied with the details of the Seifa of this Mishnah. So we will offer some explanation before learning the Mishnah itself. When one donates the Machsis HaShekel, this is a half shekel coin that one was expected on an annual basis to donate to the Beis HaMikdash. It was actually not just a donation, but an obligation on the part of the Jewish people to give a Machsis HaShekel. When this Machsis HaShekel was presented to Beis HaMikdash, a little extra, it should be pointed out, as far as the Gemara is concerned, the coinage also represented a weight, so that a Machsis HaShekel was a coin that contained a half shekel amount of silver in it. Coins could get rubbed out, of course, in the course of time. And we don't want the Beis HaMikdash to be shortchanged, so that every person who gave his Machzis HaShekel was expected to add a little bit more in order to make sure that there was definitely a Machzis HaShekel quantity of silver being donated. This little addition is called Kalboin. The Mishnah says, let's read the Mishnah, and as we go along, we'll offer explanation. Ho'achin hashutfin. This is a description of brothers that had divided an estate and then rejoined in partnership. This is in distinction to a case of brothers who simply inherited their father's estate and had not divided it up at all yet. So brothers, ho'achin hashutfin, kishechayovin bekalboin, if they are obligated to add a kalbon. And for example, brothers, as we mentioned just a moment before, brothers who had divided up their estate became two separate entities. And now they rejoined their financial efforts, but as such they are no different than two total strangers who became shutfin. Two total strangers who become partners, shutfin are partners. Let us say one of the partners gives on behalf of himself and his friend, his partner, the Machzis HaShekel donation. Let us say he gives a full shekel, a one shekel coin, to cover himself and his friend. In such a case, a person is expected to give two kalboins, because if he were giving his own Machzis shekel, he would have to add his kalbon, and if his friend were giving the Machzis his half shekel, he would have to give a kalbon. Since these partners are, as partners, they are giving one full shekel, in effect they are two separate people giving the Machzis shekel. So since they're giving it in the form of one full shekel, they nevertheless are obligated to give a separate kalbon per person. Just to make sure that we don't make any mistakes here, it's not as if that one is giving a gift for his friend, but together they are giving a full shekel. So they both have to add each one a kalbon. There's another halacha that is relevant to partners. It has to do with tithing of animals. On any given year, all the births of a given year of one's animals, 10% of them are separated, without getting into details how that takes place, but something called Meiser Behema is separated and brought to the Beis HaMikdash as a korban. The obligation of Meiser Behema applies to people who own animals in a non-partnership fashion. Namely, they are sole owners of their flock or herd. However, once you have flocks or herds of animals that are owned jointly, they're joint ownership or partnerships, those flocks or herds are exempt from the Meiser Behema tithe, and this is based on the reading of Psukim. Therefore, if you have brothers that had divided their inheritance and rejoined as simple run-of-the-mill partners, just like with regard to the kalbon, because they were two separate entities that joined together, they were obligated in two separate kalbons, showing us that they are rank and file partners, by virtue of that state is pturin mi ma'isir behemah. That's what the Mishnah goes on to say. They are exempt from ma'isir behemah. However, kishechayovin b'ma'isir behemah, you can have brothers that own a flock or herd together and be chayev in ma'isir behemah, and you know when that is. That's before they divided the estate. There's an expression called tfusus habayis, namely that the property is still considered as if it's their father's, even though their father is deceased. Nevertheless, it's considered a singular ownership with the children that happen to be jointly owning it. But since it didn't go through a formal division yet, it's considered a singular ownership, and that has bearing on these halachas. And that's what the Mishnah goes on to say, kishechayovin b'maiser b'ema, when these brothers are chayev in maiser b'ema, namely, it's a state before the estate was divided, by the same token, pturin min hakalbon. Let us say a father was giving machzis hashekel for himself and for his son. In such a case, he does not add an additional kalbon for the machzis hashekel that he's giving on behalf of his son. So these brothers that haven't divided the estate, the machzis hashekel that these brothers are giving, it's as if it's their father giving it on behalf of his son. And that's what is meant by pturin min hakalbon. As we mentioned, the Gemara itself will be focused on the Reisha. Before going on in the Gemara, let's take advantage of the Nosei, the topic heading in the outside margin. Temed, ha'im nechshav yayin o mayim. The temed beverage, is it considered wine or water? Nafgamina, the practical difference in how to classify it is, one, l'inyin kiniyah mimois meiser sheni, regarding the ability or the right to purchase the beverage with meiser sheni money. And the second nafgamina will be featured on daf chav vov amud aleph, l'taro b'mikvah. That has to do with if the temed became tomei, can it be purified through immersion in a mikveh? We will, Amir Hashem, get to that on Daf Chav Vav. The Gemara, Moni Masnisen, the author of our Mishnah, according to whom is our Mishnah taught? Loi Rabbi Yehuda v'lo Rabbanan. It doesn't seem to be in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda nor with the Rabbanan, whose opinions we will see immediately. Disnan, we have the following Tanaic source. Hametamei v'nosan mayim b'mida, one who was making temed and he put in a certain quantity of water. U'motso kidei midaso, and when he came later on to, let's say, to strain it off, he found the same amount of water that he put in. If he, let us say, put in one cup of water over the great debris and let it sit for a while and then came back and drained it off and found one cup of liquid. So the first opinion in this source says, potter, there will be no need to tithe from this beverage. Rabbi Yehuda mechayev, and Rabbi Yehuda says that one will be obligated to tithe from this beverage. Now, it may be worth emphasizing at this stage, this particular machlokas doesn't make any reference to it having become fermented or not. Money, our Mishnah that does make a distinction. So the Gemara is asking, money, who is our Mishnah going to conform to? E Rabbonon, if our Mishnah were according to the Rabbonon, well, Afagav the Hichmitz, even if it fermented, it would still be considered water. E Rebbe Yehuda, afagav de lo hichmitz. if our Mishnah were authored by Rebbe Yehuda, even if it didn't ferment. In other words, we have a Machlokas Tanoim that focuses on the definition of temed becoming either wine or water simply based on quantity of water put in and then withdrawn. Our Mishnah makes a distinction based on fermentation. So these Tanoim who don't make a distinction based on fermentation, neither one of whom could be considered the author of our Mishnah. As we go on, we see a new geometric form. We see a diamond, and on the outside margin under our Mivneh heading, we have two deos. These diamonds represent two approaches, behesber habraisa. These will be approaches to explain the circumstances or details that apply to this braisa. Omar Rav Nachman, and of course we should say that when if we understand this braisa with greater clarity or greater detail, we will then be able to establish authorship of our Mishnah. So Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabba Baravua, b'shehichmitz machlokes. This machlokes between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda and the braisa, they are arguing only in a case where it did ferment. If it didn't ferment, then Rabbi Yehuda would agree that it's not considered pira, it's considered just water. And as such, he wouldn't say anything about the need to mafresh, he wouldn't mechayev hafroshes. So the machlokes tanoim that we see here is based on a given that the temet here has fermented. What do we see then? We see a machlokas tanoim where the Tana Kama mentions that even though it has fermented, since the amount of liquid that you are drawing off is the same that you put in initially, it's exempt from tithing. In other words, he would classify it as mere water. Our Mishnah mentioned that if you have temed that is fermented, it's not considered mere water. That would conform to Rebbe Yehuda, who said that in this braisa, that if it's fermented, that was of course was what we added now, one would be chayav to tithe from it. One does not tithe from water. One tithes from something classified as pira, and as such, you would be able to buy it with your kesef meiser, which is something that our Mishnah featured. And that's what the Gemara says here at the top of Chov Vav Amud Aleph, Umasnisin Rebbe Yehuda. And our Mishnah then would be authored by Rebbe Yehuda. And these triangles represent two deos moni masnisin that we've written in the outside margin, two approaches as to who the author of the Mishnah is. So based on the hesber that we give to this braisa, based on the hesber that we have just given to the braisa, that is, that it's talking about bishe hichmitz, under those circumstances you have this machlokes, it's now established at this stage of the Gemara. As we mentioned, there are two stages as far as authorship, of defining authorship of the Mishnah, but according to this stage or this opinion, the Mishnah is according to Rebbe Yehuda. V'chein Omar Rabbi Yossi Rav Chanino b'shehichmitz machlokes, and Rabbi Yossi Rav Chanino agrees with Rabbo Bar Avua that the machlokis in the Braisa is talking about temed, that even though it's the same quantity of liquid that's drawn off as that which was put in initially, but it has already fermented, and it's under those circumstances that you have the machlokis. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.